This hour brought to you by GCNLife.com. Now a hair growth product with natural ingredients and fast results. Reveal from GCNLife.com.
To the show, Kate Delaney. Happy Thanksgiving week. The CDC issues a stern warning at the tail end of last week saying don't go anywhere as cases continue to increase rapidly across the U.S. They say the safest way to celebrate Thanksgiving is to celebrate at home with the people you live with. Gathering with family and friends who don't live with you can increase your chances of getting or spreading COVID-19 or even the flu. So they're really, really pleading to have Americans not do that after surges were seen last summer after Memorial Day and July 4th, despite incredibly blunt warnings. So there's the question. Are you on the way to grandmother's house or some other place that you're going to gather with family members on Thanksgiving? We'll see what it looks like on the roads and in the air, especially. Will people be flying? Coming up this hour, Dr. Sal, a conversation we had with him a couple weeks ago about the vaccines, what's happening with Pfizer and Moderna and the rollout, because there's some anxiety over the rollout and the transition, politically speaking, and is that going to affect it, and how many doses and how quickly the doses will get to people, and everything in between that you can imagine. The good news is the side effects minimal from the tests that have been very, very successful. So Dr. Sal, pretty poignant in what he has to say. He's on the front lines, in a sense, knowing so many people and institutions involved in the tests. Then we're going to have a conversation with Tyrone Berg. And Tyrone Berg is interesting because he's written about a creature that I would love to see. I mean, I've seen one, but I would love to see just out in the open ocean somewhere, the sperm whale. I had a friend who was diving and said she was on a dive trip and that somebody screamed, "A sperm whale!" And everybody just like kind of just jumped in with their gear to swim near the sperm whale. But seeing, I guess, a young sperm whale being born is just incredible what it's like. And an adult sperm whale is the monarch of the world, and he bows to none, according to Tyrone Berg. And that's the name of his book, Monarchs of the Ocean. And it's fascinating to listen to him talk about those whales. And I know I have a kind of a thing for whales because my mother used to talk about the whales, the whales, the whales, the whales, because she would go to Hawaii during the season when the whales were there and said how special it was and all of that. And then finally I had a chance to experience it. So I can only imagine what it would be like to see a sperm whale. Who are the enemies of the sperm whale? All that kind of good stuff. And then a conversation with my pal Brian Moreland, who is a horror writer. He's actually edited a few of my books, Level the Playing Field and Invade the Man Cave, my tip book, my Deal Your Own Destiny tip book, and a few other things as well. And he's got another book out that's very popular, getting high ratings, A Tomb of the Gods. And fascinating, and he'll talk about it, but, you know, 2.5 years of research for this book and talking about what I think is fascinating, the Egyptian history, really. And he, I think this is one of his best books. It talks about, you know, the expedition and talks about what that's like and what happens when you get into a tomb and that sort of thing. And is it haunted, etc. And I have to say it is hair-raising and very, very well done. So my pal Brian Moreland, my editor and somebody who also happens to be a writer. And, you know, I was thinking about Thanksgiving. I was thinking about Amazon everywhere I go. Amazon packages, Amazon on everybody's torches, and especially now with the Christmas and Hanukkah, etc., holidays coming up, people ordering from Amazon. I just read something interesting about Jeff Bezos, the king of the world. Jeff Bezos said famously, and I read this in The Hustle, it reminded me of it, "Your margin is my opportunity." And where is there a lot of margin? Prescription drugs. So there is the Amazon Pharmacy, a home delivery service for prescription meds in 45 states. I mean, you think of the winter and the sheltering measures people have to take part in and how big this will be for him. What happened was Amazon ramped up the internal discussions for a pharmacy product in 2017, then in 2018 with a $753 million acquisition of PillPack, which sends monthly prescriptions to the elderly. Amazon's pharmacy will leverage PillPack's infrastructure, including the pharmacy software, the fulfillment centers, the relationships with health plans, all of that. Customers over 18 can have prescriptions sent to Amazon Pharmacy for common drugs, insulin, steroid creams, that kind of stuff, birth control, and get two-day shipping, free two-day shipping discounts for generic drugs. So you know that's going to crush. I mean, seriously. The market, you know, pharma competitors have to be shook up when you think of Jeff Bezos, you know, in this war. Because are there any equals to that, right? I mean, seriously, think about it. Are there any equals? And the answer is no. The thing that's been interesting during the pandemic that is companies that have really beefed up. There's so much DoorDash because people are having food delivered. There's people staying in Airbnbs. Why? Because they're going stir crazy, and the Airbnb, especially if it's out in the middle of nowhere, pretty much is maybe what you consider to be a safe place. A couple of the those two companies I mentioned are going public. So DoorDash, and their valuations are incredible. DoorDash, $16 billion. Airbnb, $30 billion. And there's some people that are about to make a whole bunch of money. See, it's the ideation and then getting it to market and then people buying into it. And DoorDash is, you know, if you look at what it is, it's a $16 billion delivery service. Airbnb started in 2009, $30 billion. And I think that only grows. And the same with DoorDash. I think DoorDash only gets bigger because of how people are ordering. And even when the world goes back to a more, I'll call it, normal state, still you're going to see, I think, the same things. There's still going to be people that are going to be getting DoorDash, and the valuation is pretty on target. To me, it seems like it's very, very much on target. So watch, and let's see where that all goes. And, you know, you couple that with the fact that looking at that market, you copy that with Robinhood, the trading app. It's been valued at $11.7 billion. They're discussing an IPO. Yeah, they're discussing possibly doing that. And you're hearing that more. There's a whole bunch of what were little startups that have gotten really, really thick, really fat with cash. And the IPO thing is just around the corner. All right, stay with us. Speaking of just around the corner, Dr. Sal.
Attention business owners body slammed by overwhelming debt. If your business is in trouble, hassled by creditors, if you're frustrated, finally fed up with big business bailouts while your business has been left for dead, please listen close. There's a brand new fast-track bankruptcy. Some have even called it the biggest small business bailout in American history. designed for individuals and their businesses. And look, almost no one knows about this yet. My attorney wasn't even aware of it. The truth is, beating the system has never been easy because it's rigged in a sense against the little guy. But here's the jaw-dropping news nobody's talking about. They've literally just changed the system so that you can beat it, but only if you understand how the new game has to be played. Find out if you qualify at pocketsoflight.com. This government-backed small business repair program is still legal, but may not be renewed after the election. Fight back fairly, fight back ethically at pocketsoflight.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Extendovite really works. Here are some reviews from Amazon.com. John Hess, 5 out of 5 stars. Awesome. Probably my only review, but at age 40, I was getting bad heart throb and left arm pain, mainly before bed. I even stopped smoking and drinking sodas for a month, and that didn't work. After one day of taking Extendivite, it was gone and hasn't returned in 3 years. I've ordered Extendivite 13 times, so Amazon just said. Juliet Hordick. I've ordered this product before in liquid form. It is fantastic. My whole family's been on it. To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit our website at heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
This report is sponsored by Bank of America. 9 in 10 homebuyers are motivated to purchase their first home, while 4 in 5 say saving for a home is a priority, according to new homebuyer insights from Bank of America. This motivation is encouraging because homeownership can help families create a legacy and build long-term wealth, making it easier to achieve their life goals. However, many would-be buyers say that expensive home prices, high rent costs, and student loans impact their ability to save. A.J. Barkley, Senior Vice President, Neighborhood Lending at Bank of America.
We understand that becoming a homeowner can be as challenging as it is exciting. While many prospective homebuyers can afford monthly mortgage payments, saving for the upfront costs may make homeownership seem out of reach. We have low down payment mortgages as well as down payment grants and closing cost grants, which are helping eligible homebuyers break down these barriers so they can afford a home of their very own.
To learn more, visit www.bankofamerica.com/homeowner.
Here on the show, Kate Delaney, we've been talking about COVID with people around the world. In fact, we're going to talk to somebody in Liverpool coming up next about how awful it is in the UK and the big lockdown they have there, especially in Liverpool. It's the worst of the worst. 240,000 people have died in the United States. That's out of 10.3 million cases. Wrap that into what's happened worldwide. 1.27 million deaths. That's out of 51.4 million cases. We've been living under this virus cloud in the United States, I'll say officially, when most of us knew in the beginning of March. The big news, the earth-shattering news, I would say, or optimistic silver lining moment that's happened, the best one in the last 7-8 months, is the fact that Pfizer announced that their candidate vaccine was more than 90% effective, 90% effective in preventing infections in volunteers. So what does that mean to all of us? What does it mean as we move forward with it? We're hearing some very good things. Perfect time to have Dr. Sal on with us. He is a prescription drug expert, and he is a senior science advisor to the Men's Health Network, a past chair emeritus of the American Public Health Association, and former alum association board member of Columbia University School of Public Health. That means he's a smart guy. Hey, Dr. Sal, thanks for coming on.
Jackie, Thanks for having me on, Kate. Appreciate it.
So you hear about Pfizer. What was your initial reaction?
Well, it far exceeded my expectations for a vaccine's effectiveness. You know, the FDA way back in, I'm going to guess around May or so, set a basement standard, a floor standard of 50% effectiveness. That means that if you have 100 people and you give the vaccine to 50 of them, to 100 of them, 50 of them will be covered against getting the infection. But what we see with Pfizer is that their numbers now, and admittedly, they're under controlled circumstances and a selected population, show 90% effectiveness. That's the kind of efficacy that we see with tried and true vaccines such as measles and mumps. It's something that was completely unexpected and is really a very, very good number. Now, we have to wait and see if that number holds at 90. It may go up a little bit, which would surprise everybody, including me, and it may go down a little bit to 80, 85, 87, but still, that range of numbers is an incredible testament to the fact that this type of virus, this type of vaccine will work against the coronavirus, and so far, that anybody is released data from Pfizer, it's shown with very, very minimal side effects, just some local irritation-type side effects and a few headaches.
So we should feel pretty positive about this then, just how I was when I ushered you onto the show.
Yes, I think it is. You know, Pfizer, we hear about Operation Warp Speed, and many of the companies receive monies from the federal government to do the development work on their vaccines, and that's fine with me. We need them to do that. Pfizer did not. Pfizer decided to do what it's always done for decades, and develop the medication, the vaccine in this case, on their own. Pfizer has a long history of vaccines development, as well as you may, many of you know. And so do all of the companies, except perhaps Moderna, have long histories of developing vaccines. So these are very, very good signs. The other things folks should realize is that we didn't just start developing vaccines for SARS viruses at this pandemic in 2020. Way back in 2002 and 2012, scientists, virologists, people who study viruses and how to prevent them, how to treat them, they were looking at SARS-type viruses and vaccine prototypes for SARS-like viruses for almost 15, 20 years now. So when the COVID-19 strain of the novel coronavirus, which is a SARS virus, popped its ugly head, there was a baseline of knowledge. So that most people think they were starting from ground zero, they really weren't.
Yeah, so not starting from ground zero certainly helped. Now this gets the rubber stamp as it moves through, let's say, and you, as you mentioned, it could, the effectiveness could drop a little bit, but the range is really, really good. When can we expect the vaccine to be available? Certainly it would go to the frontline workers first, right?
Yeah, there is a plan that's been proposed for the National Vaccines Committee to review and to authorize and put its rubber stamp on. But that is basically a four-part distribution plan phased in, frontline workers, particularly healthcare workers, elderly, particularly in nursing homes, would be first in line. I also believe, while it's not said in the phase-in plan, military and essential workers and government, probably all the senators and congressmen and whoever is president then, will be receiving the vaccine. And it will roll out slowly. One thing your listeners should appreciate is that the companies can only make so much of this at a time. So the rollout schedules that I've seen, and there's another conference call coming up in a few days on this, is about 20 million doses every month, starting perhaps in December, perhaps in January. But the pinpoint light at the end of this very long tunnel is getting closer and closer every week. And then they'll start rolling out these 20 million doses over time, and then they'll start inoculating. So when you hear Dr. Fauci saying that the average person maybe getting the vaccine sometime around the early spring. That would go along with what my expectation is. March, April, you'll see that going into the general population.
Wow, how fantastic is this? Sitting from where you're sitting and the things that you've seen, Dr. Sal, this is pretty incredible, isn't it?
It is. It goes to show what scientists can do when they really are put their mind to it. And it's not just good old U.S. ingenuity. There are a lot of scientists in Europe working on it, globally working on it. There are many, many vaccine candidates outside of the U.S. and European Union pharmaceutical industry that are being developed. Again, they are applying themselves. My understanding in talking with folks at various of the companies, in particular Pfizer, is that they're working almost 7 days a week at this. And the my understanding is that the folks at CDC and NIH are working endlessly and tirelessly because everybody knows what the stakes are, and they are putting a full court press on this. And next date, it's up to the American public and the world citizens to look at the vaccine and make a conscious decision to get the vaccine, because what's essential to defeating the virus, in addition to the mitigation strategies that we all know all too well, and are pretty tired of, even I am, is to have the vaccine given to you. When it's your time, go for it. My wife and I are already planning on it. I don't know whether we'll be first, second, or third in line. We'll be as soon as we're eligible. We'll be getting it.
Wow. All right, so that's some great advice. Dr. Sal, thank you so much. We appreciate you hanging with us.
My pleasure. Anytime I can be back to help out, I'd be happy to.
Terrific. We will definitely have Dr. Sal back on. Good stuff. I think you should listen to what he has to say because, you know, he talked about timetables. He talked about the issues of what happens, the rollout, 20 million doses a month, the expectations, what Pfizer's doing, the conversations he's had, the 7 days a week. That's not a surprise. And scientists, what they already had known and what they worked with globally and in the U.S., which is great news when you listen to what I said about how many people have died in the world and, of course, the fears of the virus and what do we do in households. Here we have holidays coming up and people are saying, I can't have my grandparents there. I have a 20-year-old in college and how do we juggle all this? And then others who get invited to huge parties and think they're safe and it becomes a super spreading event. So this is really good news, and Dr. Sal certainly shed some great light on what we already know. All right, we're going to Liverpool next to talk to somebody who's in the middle of the lockdown in the UK. Hang with us.
If you are trying to quit drinking or doing too many drugs, listen to me. You don't know me and we'll never meet. I had a problem like you once. I drank and used to party a little too much till it got out of control and almost ruined my life. I realized I needed help to fix my problem before it totally destroyed me. If you've tried to fix your drinking and drug problem and you know you can't do it alone, you need to call the National Treatment Advisors. They'll immerse you into a 30-day program to replace your old habits with new habits and totally change your life. And if you have PPO private health insurance, the entire program may be covered. Fix your problem right now before it gets any worse. Get clean. Call now and learn more. 800-296-1252. 800-296-1252. 800-296-1252. 800-296-1252.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
USA Radio News with Dan Naraki. The makers of OxyContin admitted their role in the drug's contribution to the nation's opioid crisis. Purdue Pharma pled guilty Tuesday to 3 federal charges, admitting it impeded government efforts to combat the addiction crisis. The plea was part of an $8 billion settlement the company agreed to with the Justice Department. Purdue also admitted that they lied to the DEA about having an effective program to keep its drugs away from the black market, as well as using payments through a speakers program to entice doctors to write more prescriptions for OxyContin. Michigan's Attorney General says her office is investigating threats against members of the Wayne County Canvassing Board. The Republican chair of the board, Monica Palmer, says she's received text messages threatening her and her family since the board voted last week to certify Wayne County's election results. Michigan Attorney General Dana Nessel says her office will investigate all credible threats against government officials, regardless of party. This is USA Radio News. House prices in many areas of the country saw a dramatic jump in September. Tim Berg has the details from the USA Radio News Phoenix Bureau.
The S&P Logic Case-Shiller U.S. National Home Price NSA Index says prices rose 7% in September. That's the biggest jump since 2014. Phoenix, Seattle, and San Diego led the increase in the 20-city composite that didn't include Detroit. Prices in Phoenix jumped more than 11%, while Seattle saw an increase of 10%. From the USA Radio News Phoenix Bureau, I'm Tim Berg.
And the Dow Jones Industrial Average hit record territory on Tuesday, crossing the 30,000-point mark for the first time. The Dow closed the day up 454 points to finish at 30,046. The S&P 500 added more than 1.5%, while the NASDAQ added 1.3% on the day. This is USA Radio News.
We are GCN, the Genesis Communications Network. We've got listeners, lots of them. Around the world, around the clock, our listeners do what listeners do. They listen. And you know what listeners got? Needs. Needs for your products, your services, and money to buy those needs. With our network of over 1,000 radio stations, streaming on the web, and our satellite transmissions, we're reaching our listeners with quality conservative programming. But there's something our listeners don't have. Your offer to meet their needs. Any business needs buyers. But if our listeners don't hear your message, they're still going to buy what they need, just not from your business. So let's fix this. Tell us about your business. Then let our super creative department go to work to craft just the right message for our GCN listeners. Get started today with GCN, the Genesis Communications Network. Just shoot us an email. advertise@gcnlive.com.
When I was a kid, I can remember how much I was attracted to the whole story of Dr. Doolittle and if we could talk to the animals. Can you imagine if you could think like the animals? And what are they thinking? It's just such a brilliant twist. And we go to Australia, to South Australia, to speak with Tyrone Berg. He's in this author's corner virtually, of course, because we would love to sit down with him in person. But he's written several books, and he's got more that are coming up. This one's called Monarchs of the Ocean, and it's about sperm whales. Tyrone, what a brilliant idea you had in really giving the story from the perspective of the beast. And in this case, it's a whale. So first of all, welcome to the show. And how did this come about?
This story basically came about. I was actually waiting for my cleaners to come in from after lunch, and I was reading the newspaper, and I saw it flipping through the newspaper. I saw a photo of a dead sperm whale, and the idea just sort of popped in my head of writing a story about the sperm whales. And then, of course, I decided I wanted to write it from its perspective, not from ours. So I then did weeks and weeks of research on the sperm whales, and then I just put it away and I wrote the story. And it was fascinating writing it, because as you were writing it, you found yourself just sort of falling into the story, you know, being part of it. You know, it was like in your head, it was a full visual of the whale's movements, and it was like a 3D picture. And if somebody came in and said something, you were sort of dragged out of that whale and then put back in your chair. That's what it felt like when you're writing it. And I really was just aiming to give people a feel of what it is like to be a sperm whale. That was the objective of the story.
Yeah, and they are majestic creatures. There's no doubt about it. What did you find out about the sperm whale that was so interesting to you?
Well, I found out that their life, when they newborn, they're young, they're very vulnerable, and they are a target for the killer whales and the sharks and the likes of. You know, they will be targeted. As they get older, they sort of grow into this. And that's where the title comes from, to this animal that really has no equal. A healthy sperm whale, male or female, doesn't have an enemy in the ocean itself, because they're just too big. And I found out that they dive deep. They will tangle with the big giant squids in the deep oceans. I found that that they're huge. Like their body size is, their head is a third of the size of the animal. The echolocation, well, I found fascinating. How do they see at the bottom of the ocean? They think it's using the echolocation, which is the spermaceti, which the old whales were after, or whalers were after when they were getting that, and that's about 2,000 litres per animal. They're slow. I found that they're a slow gestation rate. They're 14 to 15, 16 months for a whale from newborn to come, you know, from conception to birth. And then there's only like, it's only one, they only have give one, but it's 4 to 20 years before they'll give birth to another one. So it's a slow birth rate. They seem to travel the entire oceans out in the deep oceans. There are sperm whales in the Mediterranean. And they do, like, the killer whales will target the weak and the young. That, I guess, is the enemy at certain parts in their life. But they live to about nearly 70 years old, so they're not a short-lived animal. So it must be quite an experience being down there. I was just wondering what it was like for them to live down there. They sort of range right from the tops of the oceans down through the centre of the oceans down through the southern oceans. I wrote the story from a southern ocean perspective and the breeding grounds around the Galapagos Islands. There was just many fascinating things, like the whale industry doesn't target them now, but you couldn't imagine them lasting that long if they were targeted again, because they're just so gestation rate. They seem to have, I found that they live really off the fish, octopus, rays, squids, the small ones through to the big ones. What they find in one of them, I found fascinating. They found 15,000 squid beaks in the stomach of a sperm whale when they found one dead one. They cut it up in that 70s. So that's a lot of squid.
No kidding. Wow. And when people read this, it's so fascinating listening to you. When people read this, what do you hope they take away from reading, you know, Monarchs of the Ocean?
Well, I hope they get a little bit of an insight on what it's like for something else to live. You know, like other animals out there, everything has a life out there, you know, and it'd be nice for them to actually sort of take away a little bit of a feel for what it's like to be a sperm whale. They're not an animated story, so it's not talking whales. They don't talk as we do. So I took that right away. There was never any consideration of doing that. And so the aim was to really do that. And one of the little things that popped in my head when I actually decided to do it from the sperm whale's perspective was actually a little incident that happened at home many years before that. I was walking down the corridor and I saw a spider, what we call a white-tipped spider, a little dangerous spider, but he was smack in the middle of a corridor. And he was walking across the floor. When he realized he'd been spotted, he tried to run away. So I was obviously fearing this little thing, but I couldn't let him live, so I stomped on him. And when I did that, I realized that everything that has life has feelings of some sort. We don't always understand it, but to give people that feeling of life, to give people that feeling of their life is what Monarchs of the Ocean is about, and a few other little stories that I've written but not actually finished. So that was actually what I'm hoping to achieve with people, is to give them a feel for the actual animals and the animals' lives.
Yeah, and you definitely did that. There's absolutely no question about that. And we will give everybody kind of a little teaser. You did this with a couple of, and you're doing this with a couple of other animals. Tell us about that.
Oh yeah, I have When I wrote this story, after I'd started writing it, I thought about doing it as a full book called In Their World, basically from the whale's perspective was one story. Another story was about an extinct, what is now believed to be extinct, Australian marsupial, the largest of the carnivore marsupials, the Tasmanian tiger or thylacine. That was basically four short stories in one, but that ended up manifesting itself into a new story called The Hunted Hunter, which is coming out soon. And that was supposed to take the Tasmanian tiger from before human settlement through to their extinction in the 1930s, probably. And the third story was about the crocodiles from its perspective in the northern waters of Australia. They're huge. Well, they're up to 20 feet long, some of them. So we're going to write a shorter story for them. The fourth story was what a cat gets up to in our backyard at night time, that cute little cat that falls asleep in your lounge and in your lap and purrs when you pat it. What does he actually do when he gets outside at night time? So that was the fourth story. So the aim was to tell the stories of these animals from their perspective, from the cat's perspective, from the crocodile's perspective, the Tasmanian tiger's perspective in the four short stories. And then, of course, this story that was, I ended up writing as a standalone, and Relentless became The Hunted Hunter, which is now a totally different story in some respects. Elements of that original story are there, but not a lot of it. That sort of manifests itself quite. It's the same, similar in length to this one. It's another novelist story. So that's what I was, that's what I was aiming to do with the whole thing, but I only ever really sort of, persisted with two of them. The other two are sort of sitting there. They're written, they're just not. And one of them sort of, in my head, manifests itself quite differently now, but, I haven't done anything with those. That's what I was aiming to do, was to tell the story from animals. And there are two shorter stories as well that I've done that haven't been used for that as well. One of them, the megafauna in Australia, going back about 50,000 years, and one of them was a future story where the kangaroos are heading towards extinction. So, and that was another one. So that was a story, but I've not used four of the six.
How fun is this to do this for you, to do that? That's why I was making that point at the beginning, the reversal. I mean, we've heard the story about talking to the animals, but you put yourself where it's about being the animal, thinking like the animal, which, as I said, is so unique. What a wild perspective. How fun is it for you to do these?
Well, look, with these stories and all the story writing is fun to do, because you actually fall into the story. You get full visuals as the stories, and I'm sure probably anybody that writes these, you know, like that, will say the same thing. You have a full vision. You know what people are going to look like. You know what the animals are going to look like. And with Monarchs of the Ocean, it was like you were whizzing around the ocean with the animal. You know, as in the section where the seals are being attacked by the orcas, you got a full feel of that. And there are some graphic bits with that, I guess, but you sort of had to do the graphics to get the story told. The whaling, what's it like for a minke whale to get a harpoon driven into its body? You know, that was all the impetus for the story. What's it like for those animals as that happens to them? You know, so I was, you know, and of course the birth stories at the beginning for Scar, which is the main character in the story. I only ever named Scar in the story because he had to have a name. I had to sort of give him something. So because of the scars on the one on the beach, I called him Scar. And so that was really what it's quite good. It's quite good when you sort of think of it, because when you look, well, I want to read it now. I don't pull it out. I haven't pulled it out for a while, but I think, well, wow, I wrote that, and I like what I wrote. I did upgrade the version. The original version was in the publisher, and this version is now the latest version. Is got the whaling ship on the front cover with the red writing, not the white, and the whale across. It's a different cover, and it's a slightly improved version on the original version, which now should be off the market. It shouldn't be any cheaper to get that. I took that off. But so this, and it's nice just to sort of see your story written, and you've successfully written one. You know, of course, now the second one's about to come out as well. So, and there's others in the pipeline. Always thinking new stories, and not always the same. Not always the same. And that's a fascinating part about it. I sort of have so many different ideas that I work with.
Right, and you're fascinating. And as I would say, pick up Monarchs of the Ocean. You can get that on Amazon.com. And Tyrone, thanks for sharing your story.
Thank you very much. It was great speaking with you.
Everything you might try to do, that luck fella's got the hold on you. Losing your money, about to lose your home. Done lost your woman and everything you own.
chances go around. And if you want to know the truth about it, I'll tell you what I'm going to do.
This report is sponsored by Bank of America. 9 in 10 homebuyers are motivated to purchase their first home, while 4 in 5 say saving for a home is a priority, according to new homebuyer insights from Bank of America. This motivation is encouraging because homeownership can help families create a legacy and build long-term wealth, making it easier to achieve their life goals. However, many would-be buyers say that expensive home prices, high rent costs, and student loans impact their ability to save. A.J. Barkley, Senior Vice President, Neighborhood Lending at Bank of America.
We understand that becoming a homeowner can be as challenging as it is exciting. While many prospective homebuyers can afford monthly mortgage payments, saving for the upfront costs may make homeownership seem out of reach. We have low down payment mortgages as well as down payment grants and closing cost grants, which are helping eligible homebuyers break down these barriers so they can afford a home of their very own.
To learn more, visit www.bankofamerica.com/homeowner.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire Fireplace Grates. Our U.S. patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire Grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from walloffire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Walloffire.com.
Trading involves financial risk and is not suitable for all investors. Past results do not guarantee future performance.
Stock market have you nervous with all the massive fluctuations? With the hope for a COVID vaccine on the rise, shifting political landscape, and the election at an end, it's virtually impossible to guess what will happen next. With Vantage Point, you don't have to. Text MONEY to 411-411 to find out how our technology can forecast market trends up to 3 days in advance with incredible accuracy. Text MONEY to 411-411 to get what you need to stay ahead of market trends and find explosive moves before they happen. Vantage Point's patented technology analyzes huge quantities of global data in seconds. Stop guessing. Start predicting trends 72 hours in advance. Text MONEY to 411-411 and experience Vantage Point for free. Text MONEY to 411-411 so you can protect and grow your capital now. Don't wait. Text MONEY to 411-411.
Go to VantagePointSoftware.com for terms, conditions, and privacy policy.
The final phase of extermination is set to commence now. And as population die-off becomes evident, you know it is the time of punishment in all that is written. The cover for mass die-off is evolution and global warming frauds, also used as false proof of their Christ. They are from the lines that were disinherited 2,000 years ago. Now they claim to be his Christ based upon blood type, DNA, and long lifespan. Go to unveilingthem.com. That's UNVEILING them.com.
Oh, how fun it is when you can have your successful writer friend and editor, too, by the way, on the show. Brian Moreland joins us. He's written a book called Tomb of the Gods. Deep inside the tomb exists a hidden world of wonder and terror. And this is, I think like number six for him, but that doesn't include short stories and everything else. I mean, my prediction is Brian, in his lifetime, will probably write 50 books. So good and such a prolific writer, and I am so excited to be able to share his story with the world and this brand new book that I want to kill him for because I can't put it down in the middle of my busiest season. But the good news is I should be finished soon and it will pull you in. Brian, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Okay, thanks for having me back. I think this is my second time to come on your show, so I'm happy to be here.
And this time around for this story, first of all, what made you decide to go in this direction and tackle a very tough but treaded territory? Because Egyptologists and so many people are fascinated with this, but you have to get it right. And you did a ton of research for this. So why did you choose this particular topic?
Well, I've always had a fascination with the mysteries of the pyramids all around the world, not just Egypt. And and sort of like, how did all these ancient civilizations come to start building pyramids? And I was also became fascinated with the Egyptians, their mythology and all their gods that they have. So I started to do some research, and I discovered that they had a all their scrolls, they talk about the underworld and their belief system that when this person dies, their soul actually goes through these trials through this underworld where there's demons and evil spirits and they have to be judged by the gods, and there's actually a book called the Book of Gates, and that each through the journey of the soul, they have to cross through these gates to get to another place where their soul is tested, and they have to go through like 12 gates before they can get to to a judgment place, which is sort of similar to what the Christians call heaven. That just, all that fascinated me. So I decided to write a story where, a team of archaeologists discover a way sort of into a world that only the Egyptian pharaohs knew about. And, they also encounter a relic, an ancient relic that doesn't seem to be Egyptian or anything of this earth. It could possibly be from, another world, in fact, and that drives them to go into this mountain tomb where there's all these tunnels, and the tunnels sort of lead deep, really deep into the earth, and that's where they discover all the wonders and terrors.
And for you, this really was deep research, because didn't it take you like 2.5 years to write it?
Yes, 2.5 years. It started out actually as a short story, and then I expanded it into a novella, which is just a short novel. And I had some people read it, and they were like, you've got to expand this into a novel. You know, they really liked the story, but they wanted more. And that's when I took on the challenge of researching, for 2 years, I didn't know that much about Egyptology until I started writing this book. But fortunately, there's a lot of information out there about the ancient Egyptians and their gods, and the mythology and the history, and I weave it all throughout the story as the characters uncover one mystery after another that's related to the pharaohs.
Yeah, so give us a synopsis of the main character and what it's like for them and what they go through.
Okay. Well, the story opens, and there's a team of archaeologists. They find this mountain tomb, and they go inside it, and they all vanish for a year. And only one, only the leader of the expedition, his name is Harlan Riley, manages to come out, and he's covered in all these weird, strange scars that are like symbols carved into his body. And he's also insane. Well, his granddaughter, he urges his granddaughter to continue the expedition and find out what he discovered in the caves, and she wants to, there's a sort of mystery of like what happened to the previous expedition. So she and another archaeologist named Dr. Nathan Trummel and several soldiers, they do a second expedition, and they uncover the tomb, and they find the ancient relic, and they just go deeper and deeper and deeper, and then they start to discover why so many explorers have vanished in those caves over the centuries.
Well, again, Tomb of the Gods, Brian Moreland's book, you can get it on Amazon, and it's getting great reviews, by the way, on Amazon, Goodreads, so you have to feel really excited about that. When you actually do that kind of work on a book, you're living with the characters, and then it's finished. What is that feeling like?
Oh, it's the greatest feeling. First of all, like I said, it was 2.5 year journey of writing and research, and I must have written 200 drafts, and that was just to get it to before I sent it off to an editor, and then we did some more editing once the story sold to Flame Tree Publishing, which is in the UK, it's it's just an uplifting feeling to complete a novel. It's such an undertaking, especially one that you have to do a lot of research for.
Yeah, absolutely. And you've been doing this for a while. I mean, you've been a writer for a while, and I sent 6 books, but really I'm not even thinking of everything that you've actually put together. I threw in short stories.
Right.
So for you, it's got to be, how many books is it?
I think I'm up to 10 books and like 20 short stories.
Wow. 10 books. So we'll go back to the very beginning. Wow.
Yeah.
And for you, the horror genre obviously is your road. Why and how did you know this was for you?
Well, I grew up loving scary movies. When I was a kid, I used to watch them with my mom all the time. She was a big fan, and she made the experience fun for me. We were watching sort of the classic horror movies like Wolfman and Frankenstein, and then it evolved, and I just started reading Stephen King and some of the great horror authors like Clive Barker and H.P. Lovecraft and Dean Koontz. Big fan of Dean Koontz, and my books are actually sort of a blend of like Dean Koontz and James Rollins. James Rollins writes more the the archaeological adventures, and then Dean Koontz and Stephen King write more of the scary stuff, and so I've kind of blended it together where Tomb of Gods is it's an archaeology adventure. In fact, it's even been compared to an Indiana Jones with more of a scary horror element to it, and the main character is Imogen Riley, and so it's got a very strong female lead who drives the story and leads the team into the caves.
So, you go down the horror road, you're up to Tomb of Gods. What comes next for you? Do you already have your next project that you're thinking about, like, hey, I might write about this, I'm thinking about doing some research in this direction. Is that how you do it?
Yes. Well, I've always got more stories in the pipeline, and I'm writing a space themed short story for a horror anthology that's due next spring, and then I'm also working on a novel that may be a prequel to one of my earlier books, Dead of Winter, and that's going to be a thriller, more like a police detective thriller set in Montreal in the 1800s.
Nice. I cannot wait for that.
Yeah.
For you, did you ever think as a kid, I mean, again, you had the interest, you told us about that, but did you ever think that you would grow up to become this writer?
I didn't. I didn't really discover reading fiction until I was a teenager, and I was about 19 in college when I decided that I wanted to be an author, and I just started learning the craft of writing and reading as much novels as I could, taking classes, and I knew that when I graduated from college, that's the career I wanted to follow, and I've been writing books ever since.
Yeah, there's something about pursuing your passion, and you can tell in all your books are wonderful, and this one really takes the cake. Again, Brian Moreland, Tomb of Gods. I'm going to give you the subtitle, Deep Inside the Tomb Exists a Hidden World of Wonder and Terror, and you will be terrified. Pick it up on Amazon. Brian, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Kate.
DrinkSuperTea.com. Powdy Arco Tea helps regenerate new cells. Everything from the cells in our skin to the cells in our organs so they function properly. Great for healthy people and can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a disease. A 1-pound package of tea is $34.95 plus shipping. To order, please visit DrinkSuperTea.com or call 818-965-9113. That's 818-965-9113.
As the coronavirus crisis continues, I've said it before, I'll say it again, now's not the time to retreat, panic, or stress out. Instead, refocus, reimagine, and reinvent. In my book, Deal Your Own Destiny, Increase Your Odds, Win Big, and Become Extraordinary, the whole focus is on overcoming adversity. I share the secrets of some of the most accomplished people on the planet and how it applies to you. I agree with George Eliot, who famously said, it's never too late to be who you might have been. Pick up a copy of my book, Deal Your Own Destiny, on Amazon.com.